Reading from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Tuesday, Testimony Tuesday, June 13th, 2023. And I have a good friend in the studio with me. We've been in a small group together, what, like 10 years? How many years?
It's a long time. A long time. Let me say that. You know where all the skeletons are.
Yeah. We've worn each other out. We've encouraged each other. We've prayed for each other. And in fact, Marlon Livingston, who joins me on today's edition of Mark and Friends, was my speaker about 10 days ago. The first Thursday in June, I have my Ministry Leaders Network luncheon. And I asked Marlon to share some weeks back, and I knew that he has skills and expertise in areas of compassion fatigue and ministering to others as he's the CEO and president of Cunningham Children's Home. He's held that role since September of 2008, and he has over 30 years of experience in the field of child welfare. And I just knew that he could identify and encourage and build up these pastors and ministry leaders. And so we had a great time, a lot of laughter. He gave a lot of illustrations and tips. And so I hope today's program may help you deal with fatigue, or if you're a servant type or you minister to others in a variety of capacities, you might gain or garner some tips or some ideas or some thoughts or ways of communicating to those people that are kind of handing over their burdens to you to solve when they really need to address them. So I'll see if I can get Marlon to give us some of those tips or ideas or thoughts. But he also holds a degree from the University of Illinois, a master's degree in social work, and a bachelor's degree in sociology from Eastern Illinois University. He served, thank you God for serving our nation, Marlon, for 23 years with the United States National Guard. And in 2007, you received the Defense Meritorious Service Medal for your service in Iraq. You've served on the board of directors of the United Methodist Association and have also chaired EAGLE, their national accrediting body. You're an adjunct lecturer and presenter for the School of Social Work at the University of Illinois. I've known you for the many years that you've lived in Mohammed, but you were born and raised in Charleston and been an Illinois resident your whole life. Married for many years, 32 years in fact, three adult children, and have been adoptive parents and have served as foster parents for over 20 children. And so when I asked you to share about compassion fatigue, knowing your heart for all the children and the staff that you work with at the Cunningham Children's Home, before we address some of the ways that you can give tips to our listeners, give us a little insight into your faith journey, how the Lord wooed you to himself.
Sure, Mark, and I appreciate the invitation to join your show today. I grew up in the church. I went to church when they would talk about Satan and going to hell, and I was scared. So I believed in God from a very early age. So I didn't have this kind of epiphany, this one day on a summer, whatever. I've always believed in God.
But you were getting that fire insurance kind of, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You didn't want to go to hell,
yeah.
So you better...
But oddly enough, I never thought I was good enough to be a Christian because I knew I had sin in my life. And it really wasn't until I was in my late 20s or early 30s, and the subject of baptism came up, which is an odd conversation with your fraternity brother from college. And I said, yeah, you know, I haven't been baptized, which caught him off guard because... He knew as a Christian, but he also knew that I had sin in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And some of that he had witnessed firsthand. And he said, well, why haven't you been baptized? Mm. He said, well, I tell you, when I think I have less sin in my life, I'm going to go all in on Jesus. And he looked at me and said, hey, you're never going to do that. And then that night, I got to thinking, like, you know, he's right. You know, there's not this good enough measure for God's grace, if you will. We're all covered. And I made that decision like within that day that I wanted to be baptized. Mm-hmm. And symbolic of the baptism, wanted to make better choices in my life that I could be a better witness for Christ. And so that's kind of how the faith journey has always, you know, I went to church my whole life. Obviously, you know, maybe not obviously, but during the college years, it was sporadic. I was in some campus stuff, but it was really kind of in my late 30s. And I remember talking to a good friend of mine, Russ Taylor, because I was kind of celebrating after I'd been baptized, you know, like, hey, you know, I got baptized. Like people who probably didn't care I got baptized. I was telling him. And Russ Taylor, and I didn't know Russ then, and I saw him at some kind of community. I said, hey, you know, I got baptized, because I knew Russ was a strong Christian. And he goes, oh, yeah, you're like a baby Christian. Good for you. You know, he's giving me some encouragement. So I just remember that interaction with Russ and, you know, to be honest, relieved that I'd gotten to the place to where I felt the need and compelled to get baptized. And then more importantly, maybe not more importantly, but I think the baptism was important, but it was really at that time that I said, hey, I need to be a better witness for Christ. And so that's my Christian. I'm married to a Christian woman who's always made me better. And I know that sounds cliche, and I know she's probably going to listen to this, but in all seriousness, my wife makes me a better person, a better Christian, and just better all the way around. So,
and I'm going to have you address this because I've been in a small group with you, like we said, 10 plus years, many years.
And we agreed not to share everything,
That's right, But I think you, like many people, initially feel like if I just do the right things, I can kind of earn my way or be in God's favor.
I'm a scorecard Christian, man. I'm like, man, I'm only going to church 50% of the time. And then, you know, I was in the Army for a lot of years and, you know, I struggle with profanity. You know, I picked up a lot of choice words there. And then, you know, I just had the regular guy sense that guys have. And I was like, man, on a scorecard, I mean, I wasn't reading the Bible every day. Like, how could I be a Christian? You know, how could I call myself a Christian if I'm not in the Word every day? And I just had these unrealistic checklists in my brain about what it meant to be a Christian. And God's grace, I mean, to be honest, I don't know a lot about the other religions. I took a course on it. But God's grace covers quite a bit, folks.
Right, right. And the reality that we all have to come to terms with, we can never earn our way into heaven. It's not about how good we are if we're good 99% of the time. It's not if we have many good days or we tithe or regularity with church. It's about what he did on our behalf. And it's really coming to the point where, Jesus, I can't earn my way into heaven. It's only because of the shed blood, what you did on my behalf. And so for our listeners that are maybe trying to measure up or follow the rules or do everything right, hey, that's good. You know, if you're doing it to God's glory and you want to be pure and perfect and a great ambassador, a disciple of Jesus, hey, great, keep doing it. But that's not what's going to earn you into heaven. It's what Jesus did for you.
And to be honest, those ghosts still chase me. I still have this kind of overwhelming desire and kind of maybe some negative self-talk that, today I probably wasn't good enough, you know, and I got my self-concept is intact. My ego is intact. But when it comes to Christianity, you know, I struggle on some days saying I missed the mark today and it weighs on me. I think it's easy to say I missed the mark, but the amount of weight sometimes that puts on me is tough.
And we know when I'm not around, you do miss the mark, you know, you miss me. But it was interesting. We opened up the program with this verse out of Ephesians chapter 4, be kind and compassionate to one another. That's one thing I've learned from you, your passion and compassion for the children at Cunningham Children's Home. You love on them. You care for them. Is that God working in and through you, or do you just resonate? You shared that with all the pastors and ministry leaders a week and a half or so ago, that you love dealing with children, children that are high risk, children that are troubled. Did God just kind of put that into your heart, or is that just something that you grew into?
I have always wanted to work. Even as a young kid, I did not like bullies, and I always had empathy for people that were victims. And so I remember from young age, like seeing things in commercials, I still cry a lot. Like I'm a big crybaby. So I think some of that is just my temperament. And I think my work is my calling, as cliche as that is. I think this is what I was meant to do. I shared with the group last week, you know, that I don't care to hang around adults a whole lot. You know, I really like the challenge, if you will, and the impact I can have, particularly on adolescent kids, you know, and that's where I got my career started, is I worked with adults for about a year and a half. I couldn't stand it. You know, I worked in drug and alcohol treatment, and it wasn't that. It was, I just didn't care to work for adults, and I liked working with adolescents. And now with Compassion, I have to be compassionate. I have to be a compassionate leader, both with my team, and I have to make sure that we represent that in our work. And, you know, at Cunningham Children's Home, we have 400 staff, gifted, talented folks, all could probably make more money doing other stuff. But this calling to make the world better and have an impact on kids is with them. My job is to recognize that compassion is like a gas tank. And sometimes if you're not taking care of yourself and visiting the refuel station every now and then, you can get empty.
This makes it as an easy transition, because last week with the ministry leaders, you talked about fighting the good fight and compassion fatigue. And so for our listeners, whether they're in ministry full time as a career or a position, pastor, teacher, to those that pour out and help their neighbors or assist at the soup kitchen or volunteer in different ways, getting fatigued is common to all of us.
Sure.
And there are some boundaries that we need to have, but maybe walk us through how to avoid compassion fatigue and the difference between burnout and compassion fatigue.
Mark, and if I can just share a little bit, I remember when your radio station, I'm looking up at the big map now, and I know your listeners can't see it, but it was kind of a smaller circle. Mm-hmm. I look up now, and the blue covers all of Central Illinois. Wow. And I remember you talking about the opportunity and the desire to expand the ministry of this radio station to Central Illinois. And then you made a comment that you still haven't lived down to this day. You said, well, you know, after a merger consolidation, however you framed it, you know, things are going to be easier then. And then for those that have been in business for a while, like, we're just shaking our heads, like, little do you know. You know, you've taken on a lot, you know, in your career, and you've shared some of those burdens with us. And I want to make a distinction between burnout and compassion fatigue. Burnout is you've just overbooked yourself, mm-hmm. your calendar. There's less emotionality to it. You do lose some motivation, but it's just overbooking, overcommitting yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's what you basically see with burnout. It's folks that have just overcommitted.
Right.
Compassion fatigue is the cost for caring for others or their emotional pain resulting from the desire to help relieve the suffering of others. It's also known as vicarious or secondary trauma, where their trauma, you can be so invested in that, mm-hmm. that there's this overwhelming emotionality to this situation, and it's because you don't have any more empathy to give. You know, sympathy is like, oh, I wish that guy was not homeless. Empathy is more, I wonder what that guy's feeling to be homeless. And so I probably didn't do that justice, but there is a difference between that. When you have compassion fatigue, it's because you have repeatedly emotionally invested and your tank is empty. And it often occurs because you're taking on too much of that burden of the folks in your circle. And this could be ministry leaders. It could be your family. This used to be a term normally used for doctors and nurses and hospice workers. But with the pandemic and the violence and community violence, this is a real thing now. And compassion fatigue is just when your tank gets empty. And a lot of it is because you are not taking care of yourself, which is critical in the helping profession.
And you gave some great questions that can be asked to not only not take on their burden, but to shift it back to them so they can make choices or they can look at options or they're more invested in it than kind of saying, how are you going to resolve or solve this for me?
Sure. We talked about, well, I want to talk some about symptoms of what compassion fatigue might look like, and then we'll get into it. How can you avoid this? Irritable, depression, feelings of overwhelmness. You start feeling literally like the person that you're trying to help. Mm-hmm. And those are some pretty common symptoms. So when they're describing things to you, you're actually feeling those feelings, and that's when you need to reset, if you will. There's some approaches. We try to show and demonstrate and promote self-care at Cunningham. That's been pretty hard to do through the pandemic, to be honest, because of limited community resources, and we were all doing extra. But coming out of it, we are wanting to do a better job of promoting self-care and how you take care of yourself. And you know the cliche of, you know, put on your own oxygen mask first before you put it on your child, right? And you do have to take care of yourself. And so there are some basically techniques or approaches you can use. One of the first sayings I really like, or mantras to live by, is what you permit, you promote. Mm-hmm. And what that means is if you're seen as the problem solver, and I'm the worst at this, Mark, you can come to me with a problem that's, say, 20 words long by about word 12. I already have your solution mapped out for you. That's the type of person. I've had people early on in my career tell me, like, hey, I don't need you to do anything. I just need for you to listen.
Yeah.
And that's tough. And when I'm a therapist, and in the role of a therapist, that's easy to do because it's a very disciplined approach to that. But being a leader and a type A leader who likes to solve every problem.
And how many husbands, you know, the wife just wants to share, communicate, yeah, and he's already solving it, and then it turns into a fight or an argument.
Well, you know, what the feedback I've gotten over the years is when you do that, when you go right to that problem-solving mode and don't allow any partnership in that, it's really diminishing the weight of the problem of the person you're talking to, you know? And in some cases, they don't need for you to solve it. It's overly paternal in a sense, particularly with my wife. If she's come to me with a problem, like, you know, we've been married 30 some years. Mm-hmm. She solved a lot of problems. She doesn't need my help solving all the problems. And so sometimes she just wants me to listen and give her feedback and understand. So what you permit, you promote. If you want to be seen and if you want to get into the cycle of compassion fatigue, go ahead and promote yourself as the problem solver in chief. And the challenge with that is that we need problem solvers in the world. And for those of us in ministry, we need to be well rested and equipped and ready. And it doesn't do anybody good if everybody gets burned out. So that's one of my first tips. What you permit, you promote. Love and Logic was a course I went to. I went to the mountains, not to the same one as Moses, but I went out to Colorado, which it is God's country. It's a beautiful area. And I went to this course called Love and Logic, and it's how you work with kids. But there's a lot of practical learning to be done in that, in the terms of when you interact with somebody that's having a problem. First, we have this social work concept called start with where your client is at, or start where the person is at. If I'm waiting for you to get into word 12 of 20, and I'm already telling you the solution, I'm not listening to you first. And I'm not starting at your starting point. And so that's a very important concept. So when somebody comes to you with a problem, one of the first things you should do is, you know, ask them, hey, what have you tried? What have you tried? It forces you to listen and not just immediately start problem solving. So they go on and say, hey, you know, I really haven't tried a whole lot, or whatever that response might be. If they have tried something, ask them, well, how'd it turn out? What happened? What went off the rails? What have you tried? What happened? The next one is, and this is where you kind of get to step out of the problem solver in chief and say, hey, would you like to hear what others have tried? Now, this is where it depersonalizes in some ways. This is what I would do. And sometimes people, you know, kind of live vicariously through other people and say, hey, well, Mark, what would you do? Mm-hmm. Because whatever you say, how you would do, that's how I'm going to do it. When you respond with an approach like, would you like to hear what others have tried? It opens up the gamut. And you can share, like, you know, personally, I've tried this, but I know this works for others. And that alone gets them, and what you've really done is, I don't want to call it a trick, but it's kind of a trick. You've tricked them, in a sense, of helping themselves solve the problem. And you're a sounding board now. You've maybe given some advice, but they're a partner in it. And that's a very powerful thing, a very powerful way about building resiliency for yourself. Because the opposite of compassion fatigue and those feelings of hopelessness and tiredness and irritability is resilience. Mm-hmm. And resilience is strength. And you can be resilient and you can help a lot more people if you're partnering with people and solving their problems than you can by just giving them, here's the six things that I would do.
Right. And I love this factor when you say, would you like to hear what others have tried? You're shifting it because they might say, no, I'm going to be closed-minded. I don't want to answer anymore. But you're kind of pivoting. would you like to hear? And so it's now, they're almost being wired to be receptive to hear.
Yeah,
it's, I think, a really great, as we're running out of time here, what have you tried before? So you just right away, what have you tried? You know, okay, okay. Oh, you haven't tried anything. Well, maybe you should try some things. Or how did it turn out? What happened as a consequence of you doing those things? So there again, talking, and you're listening, you're processing, you're maybe getting ideas, but you're not putting them out on the table because they're going to resolve it or solve it themselves. They're not putting it all on you, so you're fatigued. And then would you like to hear what others are doing? And I think you also mentioned in our closing minutes to find others that maybe have... Yeah. What is that?
I gave some examples of, for parents who've lost a child, for folks going through a job loss, for those going through cancer, for those with addiction issues. I was a therapist for quite a while. I have tons of certificates, et cetera, lots of clinical training. But in some cases, Mark, the best people to help is somebody who's have that who has had that same lived experience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what you say is, would you like to hear whatever is it tried? And then you say, you know, I know some folks that go to NA. You know, it's a great resource. Can I connect you with some of those folks? Or what can I do to help you get connected with those? Would you be willing to get connected with those folks? And basically helping them help themselves is the best help you can give.
Yeah. All right, listening friends, I hope that some of the conversation today might help you with your compassion fatigue, or someone you know that you feel is maybe on the border or just wiped out or maybe given up on the ministry because they feel it's so taxing. Well, maybe you can have them listen to this broadcast and there'll be some encouraging words that God will use for them. This program is archived at greatnewsradio.org, also at wluj.org under the Mark and Friends tab, so you can listen to it again or anytime. It'll be archived for years at greatnewsradio.org and wluj.org. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Marlon Livingston with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.
God bless, Mark.
We have turned from your ways, Lord. Your fruit we cease to bear. We lack the power. We've been